Just when you thought Reading were turning a corner, they let you down once again. The Royals were 3-1 up with 11 minutes to go against an unbeaten Queen's Park Rangers side on Saturday afternoon before collapsing and conceding a 91st minute equaliser to draw 3-3 and leave them in the relegation zone. Welcome to episode 271 of the Tile West End podcast. My name is Ollie Allen, stepping in to host this week in the absence of Mark Mayo. And I'm very pleased to be joined by two of the Tile West End's finest contributors. Firstly, Ben Thomas, who does our view from the Dolan column. How's it going, Ben?
Life-wise, all right. Football-wise, just, you know, embarrassed, disappointed, frustrated. All those words, Ollie. But yeah, life-wise, absolutely fine.
Yeah, and indeed, all of that hell from yesterday to come over the next hour or so, I'm sure. And also Dave Handbags Harris. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not bad, mate. All good. Yeah, well, same as Ben, really, in life terms.
Ticking along, I'm sure. Before we delve into the highs and the lows of yesterday's draw with Queen's Park Rangers, just a big shout out, first of all, to our sponsors, ZCZ Films. As ever, really much appreciated the support they give both the website and the podcast into their second season sponsoring us now. And as I say, it really is appreciated. So please do go and check out all the fantastic content that they produce. If you are an art lover, or even if you're not, I'm sure there'll be something up your street to watch. And likewise, everyone who supports us over on Patreon, that's patreon.com/TileWestEnd. Literally any donation, you know, however big or small, is genuinely really appreciated by everyone at the Tile West End, and sort of, you know, keeps us motivated, I suppose, particularly when the form isn't as good on the pitch as it is at the moment, to keep us going off the pitch and to keep producing podcasts and whacking stuff up on the website. So yeah, if you do want to go and support us over on Patreon, that'd be much appreciated. Also, a quick shout out to check out our new newsletter. Steve Curtis, or you might know him as Royal Hoops on Twitter, has taken back the reins of our weekly newsletter. The second edition came out on Friday, I believe. You can sign up to that. Really easy. Just go over to our Twitter page. There's a link just underneath our bio. It's very, very easy to sign up to. Just whack your email address in and you'll get all the latest content from the Tile West End straight into your email inboxes every Friday. So you don't miss a single article. Right. Let's get into it with the recap for Reading 3. Queen's Park Rangers 3.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, where on earth to start with this? As I say, it was a game of ups and downs, a roller coaster, really, as most Reading games have been this season. All of our games seem to be complete goal fests, really. On the basis that we do actually seem to be able to, capable of scoring quite a few goals, but crucially, we also concede a hell of a lot at the other end as well. 3-3, a six goal thriller at the Maleski Stadium. If you were a neutral in attendance, I'm sure you might have enjoyed it, but certainly for it would have been QPR fans who would have left the select Carlisle Stadium much, much happier than Reading fans. I mean, going into this one, both of you, I mean, Reading were on a run of three straight defeats in 21st position. QPR were third in the table and still unbeaten. And having come out of it with a draw, it's that sort of all too familiar feeling of you probably would have taken the point at kickoff, particularly against, as I say, a QPR side who were unbeaten going into the game. But it's the manner of the draw, you know, when you're 3-1 up with 11 minutes to go. Ben, would you have taken a draw at 3 p.m. and were you happy with a draw at 5 p.m.?
Well, I think leading up to the game, I was, you know, rightly or wrongly, quietly confident about, you know, potentially getting maximum points. I think one of the things that I've been excited about, and I'm sure many other fans have been excited about over the last couple of weeks, is the new signings and bringing that kind of experience in and seeing how that would kind of supplement what we've already got. The most frustrating thing about me, or the most frustrating thing for me, was when none of those players were involved. And when I talk about that, I talk about Dan and Drinkwater being injured for whatever reason, which instantly set alarm bells ringing in my head, because I'm thinking, well, have we signed not one but two defective players potentially? So when I saw the team sheet, I would have 100% taken a draw. To then be into a league that potentially, you know, people argue that we didn't deserve 3-1, you have to see the game out. And I have to say, after the, you know, the final whistle, I was absolutely furious. Probably the most cross I've been, because it doesn't matter who you're playing. In a game when you're 3-1 up and you've got 11 minutes left on the clock, you have to see that game out. It's everyone's responsibility in the dugout and on the pitch to see that game out. So I wasn't happy with the draw at all. First half, I thought we were absolutely shambolic. I know we obviously went into the break at 1-1, but it was genuinely the worst I'd seen us play. There was no direction. Positionally, we seemed to be all over the place. We looked lethargic. You know, great goal. You know, the nice little ball in from Halilovic to Swift and a superb finish. But if I'm completely honest, and it pains me to say it, we didn't deserve to be 1-1 at halftime. We really didn't. So at the end of the game, I generally felt like we'd lost the game. And, you know, moving forward now in terms of the games that we've got coming up, which we'll talk about later on, you have to say that we've got to go for maximum points, because we are in a really sticky situation now already early on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it was a draw that I know Pano described as a draw that felt like a defeat. And it is that classic one where you can see an equaliser in stoppage time and it feels like you've dropped 2 points massively. And obviously, it's not the first time we conceded late on this season, conceding a late winner against Stoke, the 97th or 98th minute winner that Coventry scored against us as well. Let's look at the lineup to begin with. You mentioned it there, Ben, briefly, that there was no Scott Dan or Danny Drinkwater, obviously the signings just before deadline day. Neither involved even in the match day 18. I think probably down to lack of fitness. Obviously, Drinkwater played in pre-season with Chelsea, but obviously Scott Dan's not played any football at all since being let go by Crystal Palace at the end of last season. There was a debut for Baba Rahman, a left back. I thought he was pretty solid, to be fair, particularly going forward, putting a really good cross actually for George Puskas in the second half that maybe Puskas should have done better with. But I thought he was pretty solid. A first start for Alan Halilovic. As you mentioned, Ben, got the assist for John Swift. Also thought a pretty decent showing from him, perhaps a little bit at fault in the third goal, giving the ball away for QPR to go and score. A first appearance of the season for Obi Ajaria after recovering from an injury and both COVID as well. So good to see him back. Obviously, clearly not quite back up to full fitness yet, but there was still sort of a few twists and turns we've become used to with Ovi. And also no Andy Rinomata due to an ankle injury. So Tom Dedibashiru dropped into the holding role alongside Josh Laurent. The game itself, I suppose, the elephant in the room for the first half is the first QPR goal is yet another set piece. It's the sixth set piece goal we've conceded this season, if you include the goal from a throw-in against Bristol City. You know, again, just such solid defending. You know, the free kick taken from, you know, near enough the halfway line, knotted into the back post, nodded back across goal, and then Michael Morrison just gets his feet completely confused and ends up putting it into his own net. Obviously, we've got the mailbag in a bit, but I just thought I'd include the question here in this section from Math. Is zonal marking to blame? Again, it's the topic that is on every Reading fan's lips at the moment, is the marking from set pieces and corners. I would recommend going and checking out a piece we had on a Tile East End this week from Stephen, who's at cabin_13 on Twitter. A really, really in-depth look on our marking and our set piece goals conceded over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, he's got more time on his hands than me, you know, going through back all the goals we've conceded and scored over the last 4 or 5 years to see if there is a trend. But Dave, I mean, whether you're of the belief that zonal marking is the problem or not, I mean, I think we can all agree that the way that Reading defend full stop, but particularly the way Reading defend from these set piece situations, these dead ball situations, is a major, major problem at the moment.
It's a huge problem. As you mentioned, we've conceded a goal from a set piece in almost all of our games this season, at least one. So, and that first goal, I mean, I was in Club 1871 and I clocked the run from, I can't remember the guy's name, QPR number 5, started making it. He ran all the way around the back. I just thought he's going to win the header here. And, you know, time and time again, not just from set pieces. QPR had overloads on the far post all throughout the first half in particular. They killed us down the flanks. They were very, you know, let's get it out of the way. QPR are a good side. They are a good side. And if they play like that and continue to play like that throughout the season, then they'll be there or thereabouts in the playoff picture. And, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, what you can do when you have a manager that's given, you know, time and space to build his own squad and put, and insert his own ideas on a team. But, you know, that doesn't negate our own fallibilities. And of course, as I say, the consistent attacking down the flanks with absolutely no protection for the fullback. I thought Yeardom and Rahman both did well, all things considered. Given, as I say, they were given absolutely no protection from Ajaria and Halilovic. They were left to do it all alone. And, you know, the second two goals both came from balls in from wide, essentially, on the inside channel. And it was, again, it was so frustrating to see, you know, particularly when we're 3-1 up, to see a goal conceded with such quick, so quickly, with what can only be described as a run down the wing and not doubling up on Albert Adoma, who incidentally was absolutely top notch when he came on. The game was made for him down out wide, and no surprise that he came up with that assist. It was a lovely ball in. Don't get me wrong, but it's frustrating how we seem to just consistently sit too deep, particularly in the second half, inviting pressure. You know, this, exactly the same happened against Preston. We were lucky to come away with a win from that game in the end. We had to rely on Raphael. The same happened against Coventry, and, you know, conceding late winner there. You know, late goals being conceded simply because we are sat so deep, and, you know, you just need to push them up 10 yards, you know, maximum 10 yards. And actually ensure that you've got that, you know, that space, and play the, you know, actually play higher up the pitch. Substitution didn't help. I'm sure that we'll come to that in more detail. Taking off your only striker and, you know, actually, you know, even my 7-year old who was there said, how are we going to score goals if we haven't got a striker on the pitch? I mean, it's just, yeah, there's so much to dissect from this game, and it's so frustrating. But when you're 3-1 up, as you say, with you know, 12, 11, however many minutes it was left, you should be winning the game. You should be seeing the game out and winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there is so much to dissect and so many problems, I suppose, when, you know, for those final 12 minutes, you say the late goals, the defending, the substitution. And we will get into that, I can guarantee you. But I think it is worth mentioning, I suppose, at least the good things that Reading did to get themselves into that position in the first place. Obviously, equalising midway through the first half through John Swift. Great ball from Alan Halilovic, as you say, Ben. Probably it did feel pretty undeserved, I have to say, sitting at 1-1 at half time. But then second half, I think for the first sort of half an hour or so, we were brilliant. I think, you know, two really well worked team goals, a couple of really neat finishes from John Swift. And, you know, we haven't actually mentioned yet, you know, we're 15 minutes or whatever in, and we still haven't mentioned that John Swift got a hat trick. And I suppose that's the sad thing for Swift, really, is that his brilliant performance yesterday is the gloss is taken off it a little bit by the way, you know, Reading just capitulated at the end. But we have to mention John Swift. You know, he's now the Championship's top goal scorer this season with 6 goals to his name. Obviously, the hat trick yesterday, I believe it must be his first career hat trick. You know, getting into really it is brilliant. Yeah, I mean, getting into really great positions. You know, we've always known Swift as this brilliant creative player, but this season he's really sort of getting into the box, you know, getting on the end of crosses and passes back into the box, sort of adding that finishing aspect to his game. But I mean, Ben, I dread to think where we would be without John Swift this season. And yesterday, yes, despite the result that Reading's a team capitulated, that you have to give so much praise to John Swift yesterday.
I think in terms of where we are, we wouldn't have the 6 goals that he scored, and we probably wouldn't have had any points because, you know, he's led the team this season. If I'm honest, I think it's long overdue. We've been crying out for this John Swift for a long time. We've seen it in spells. Obviously, injuries have not helped, and, you know, chopping and changing managers regularly has not helped his cause either. But he was the only one, save for maybe, you know, a couple of Puskas chances, who I thought Puskas was outstanding yesterday. I really did. His movement off the ball was incredible, pulling people left, right, and centre, and making the space for Swift to move into. We'd be a lot worse off. And the irony of it is, yet again, that he's out of contract next summer and off he goes on a free, and that's that. It's a cycle with this football club, and it becomes very, very difficult, because on one hand, you want to sit there and appreciate a talent like John Swift and go, oh, we're really lucky to have him. But we did this last year with Elise, and we did this last year with Richards, and we knew full well throughout the season that they leave at the end of it. So as a fan, you're kind of torn between those two emotions, really. He was excellent yesterday, and QPR didn't really have an answer to him. He is by far and away the best central midfielder in the Championship right now, possibly attacking midfielder as well. You know, his return of six goals is phenomenal in a team that really has struggled to create chances in the games that they've had. So, yeah, really grateful for his goals. Really, really pleased for him personally, as I'm sure he will be. But, you know, as we've said already, it doesn't disguise the fact that we didn't pick up 3 points that we really needed. And I think if you asked any Reading fan, and hopefully if you asked John Swift, the answer would be, we'd rather not have a hat-trick and just have the 3 points instead. So the key really is potentially to manage his workload, considering that he's not really, to my knowledge, had a full season of play since he's been with us because of the injuries. But who else is going to come in and replace him? You know, there's nothing to back it up. If he gets a knock or if he gets injured, then we really are stuffed. We can always look at things that are positive. But unfortunately, as we all know with this club at the moment, and I'm not, you know, trying to be the dark cloud in the sky, but there's always a doom and gloom element to what's going on. And that's symptomatic of where we are. And that's a symptom of where we are with John Swift as well, really.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned his injuries there, and that's probably my main worry with Swift is, are we going to see him for a full season? When you know, either if he gets sold in January or whatever, or he does pick up an injury, because as you say, you know, he's not really completed a full season. I don't think in about 3 or 4 years, and his consistency has always been an issue in the past. Obviously, he started this season like a house on fire, and I just pray he can keep it up, because at the moment he's one of the very few good things coming out of Reading Football Club. You also mentioned George Puskas there. We'll get onto that now. His substitution is almost a game-changing moment, really. He was on the pitch for QPR's second goal. So obviously, John Swift made it 3-1 on 77 minutes. And then within 2 minutes, Andre Gray, the substitute, scored on his debut for QPR. You know, the age-old adage of you're most vulnerable when you've just scored, and Reading very much proved that to be the case and made it 3-2. Yeah, and then this just bizarre substitution from Veljko Panovic, taking off George Puskas and bringing Tom Holmes on. You mentioned it there, Ben, but I mean, Dave, what did you think of George Puskas's performance yesterday? I mean, I think for me it was probably one of his best showings of the season. He looked enthusiastic. He actually got some decent service for once. He had a couple of decent chances that maybe should have done better with, but it didn't seem the right decision to take him off yesterday with 10 minutes to go, when he might have been better off sticking him and try and getting that fourth goal and seeing the game out.
Yeah, I I thought his performance was decent. He's, for me, it's make or break for him. So he's got to start producing the goods. And he was decent yesterday. He put himself about quite well. And got into some really good positions. And like you say, his movement just created the space and took the defenders away for John Swift to just drift into. I think, as ever with him, finishing and decision-making needs really, really needs work. There was a couple of instances in the first half, one where he shot from a very narrow angle when he should have been laying it back. For one of the players coming in from the edge of the area, one of whom was certain John Swift, and a couple of other attempts. Certainly the header you mentioned, a minute after they've got their second. I'm sorry, he's got to score. He's simply got to score, or at least, you know, he's got to make the keeper work at the very least, and he's put it wide. And it's it's cost us in the end, really, that header, unfortunately, because we didn't create a chance again after that. The substitution, as I mentioned, was just bizarre. And I remember going to the night with Steve Coppell of the Reading Former Players Association 18 months ago. And Steve Coppell is a man, you know, obviously, you know, I'd have his babies if I was physically able to. He said, he spoke about a back five or a back three. And, you know, he simply said, you play where the players are. You know, he was never a fan of a back three because, you tend to play where your players are. And if you've got three or five defenders, you're going to be ended up playing there. So he always liked a forward two or a forward one if he was playing a midfield five. Lo and behold, it intensified almost the tendency to sit back. I never understand why you change the formation. Certainly in that situation, you need to stop the ball at source. You don't need to, you don't stop it when the ball's coming in because that's the dangerous situation. And bringing on Tom Holmes, absolutely no disrespect to him. I thought it was because he didn't really do anything wrong, but it was very difficult really to understand why he was being brought on when we probably needed, freshening up in the midfield, because Josh Laron had got through a lot of work. I thought Dele Bashiru was okay. But I think we can safely say from that performance that he's not a double pivot in midfield. He should be, a lot higher up the pitch, really. So Josh Laron was getting through a lot of work, really, to sort out to block out the defensive side. And needless to say, QPR found their way through on a number of occasions. It was, again, it was one of those frustrations for me that Rinham Hotter was injured, but Danny Drinkwater as well, who hasn't even played a minute in a Reading shirt, Scott Dan as well. It's intensely frustrating, really, just sat here talking about it.
Well, Velko Panic did say post-match in hindsight that it was poor judgment was the Holmes substitution. He also said that he would have made different subs if he had wingers available, which was equally bizarre because he had Junior Hoylett on the bench. I'm willing to give Panovic probably more time than most supporters are, but he's not helping himself with these comments he makes post-match. And I think it just infuriates fans more when he comes out with things like this. And yeah, as you say, Tom Holmes came on, Reading sat back, invited the pressure onto them. As you mentioned earlier, Albert Adoma came on for QPR and I thought he was brilliant down the right-hand side, and Reading just simply couldn't cope with him. And that inevitable collapse comes, as I say, not the first time we conceded late on this season. Against Stoke, we lost it in the 85th minute. Against Coventry, the 98th. And yeah, now the late equaliser conceded against QPR. It's the fourth time in six games this season we've conceded at least three goals, which is a horrific statistic. When you think back to the start of last season when we kept seven clean sheets in the first eight games, we were breaking all the right sorts of records back then. But now it's 16 goals conceded in the first six games is the joint worst record after six games since 2004 in the Championship. Ben, I suppose it's the big question, really. What is the big problem? But do you question Pano's game management? Do you question the mentality of these players? It's not a one-off now. As I say, this is the third time we conceded a late goal and dropped points late on in a match this season.
I mean, just going back to that point about Tom Holmes. I mean, I like Dave, I love Tom. I think he's fantastic. He's a lovely guy. He did really well last season. But if Tom Holmes at the moment is our insurance policy to see out a game at 3-1, you might as well play the kids for the rest of the season. Generally, you might as well just stick them all in because we're not going to achieve anything doing that at all. And that, that was proved yesterday. It's ridiculous. And his comments about, I wish I had wingers. You're right, Ollie. He had Hoylett on the bench. At least if you're gonna change it and you wanna mix things up because Pistol's looking tired or whatever, stick Clark on. Give him something else to handle up front, because all that happened was they were able to sit back and concentrate on getting a ball forward, and then they scored the two goals from that. It's absurd. It really is. And I just couldn't believe it. And the biggest thing, in terms of answering your question, is how on earth no one in the coaching staff thought to question him. And if they did, they obviously didn't do it loud enough. How all of those coaches thought, that's a great idea. You know, who's challenging him in the dugout when he's making these absolutely preposterous decisions? And, you know, like you, and we've said it time and again, whether it's through articles or comments or, you know, on this pod, me and you both agree that sacking people is not the right answer. I do not want to see Panovic sacked, but it's becoming even more difficult by every single game to justify what he's doing. You know, team selection, all right, you could say he's got injuries, he's got this, he's got that, fine. No one would have looked at that team yesterday, given what he's got available, going, oh, that's the bad side. But the mentality and the resilience and the common sense of the players is just completely lacking. And my biggest problem at the moment is that when you look at that team yesterday, the core of that team was there last season. They were doing it week in, week out, at this time last season at the start, you know, breaking records, as you say, for the right reasons. So what's happened? Generally, what's happened to that core of players for them to switch off so horrifically to keep throwing away games? And you could look at it and go, yeah, QPR, great side, you know, blah, 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 unbeaten, whatever. But as you said, this is not the first time this has happened. And this is where people lose their rag as paying fans and people that love the club, because you can't justify it. You cannot keep going through the league games as we are, literally throwing points away. You know, we should be looking at Cheese and thinking, licking our lips, right, John Swift's day, Huskers get on the score sheet, let's go and enjoy the football. I'm genuinely worried about Tuesday. And we're playing a team that's just got beaten 6-2. It, honestly, I can't, with Panovic at the moment, I just don't know what he's thinking. I really don't. I it baffles me. And along with his coaching staff as well, it's bizarre. It really is bizarre. And I think the biggest thing that concerns me is that the players are capable of switching off so spectacularly. You know, as you said, we were brilliant at those 30 minutes in the second half. Absolutely superb. Tore QPR apart. But then it just goes to pot. And I don't know how we can be so Jekyll and Hyde in one half, you know, let alone one game, in one half of football. Something is seriously wrong with the way that he's communicating with those players and the way that they're taking on his instructions, because it's not working at the moment. And I don't want to see the guy sacked, because I think he's brilliant. But at the end of the day, we all know that you're judged on results. And if you don't get those results and you're consistently throwing away games in the manner that we're doing, you can't justify it. You can't keep going through the same process that he's currently going with those players at the moment.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's not just the results, it's the manner of the results as well. And I think you can look at it one of two ways. You can look on the brighter side and say that, yeah, we are pretty close to getting, you know, results. We're a couple of minutes away from beating QPR yesterday. We're a couple of minutes away from getting a point at Coventry, a couple of minutes away from getting a point at Stoke. And in some ways, not to use Paul Clement's words, but they are fine margins to a certain extent, because Reading are certainly not being outplayed in these games. You know, they're levelling games for long periods of time and even leading games for periods of time. But as you say, then they throw it away. And that's the other way of looking at it, I suppose, is that these results are made even more infuriating by the fact that we're throwing them away so late on. And look, that's not me saying that if Reading were sat, as in we are sat on 4 points, and if we're sat on 4 points just with the results as they are, people wouldn't be angry. Of course, they'd be angry, and it's not good enough to be sat on 4 points after six games. But I think what has made the mood even worse than it is, and not just because of the results, is because of the manner of the results and the manner of, you know, the conceding these late goals and throwing, as you say, points away and wins and draws away. And that's what's got to improve. We have to get better at seeing games out, because, you know, I don't feel confident that we've got a result now until the final whistle blows. You know, you go into stoppage time and he puts up 5 minutes yesterday, and you think, you know, the goal's probably going to come, because this team is not certainly not good enough mentally, it seems, to deal with pressure being invited on them. And this manager, unfortunately, at the moment, doesn't seem tactically good enough to be able to deal with seeing games out. I will give the final word for the recap to Veljko Paunović. So let's hear his thoughts on the draw with QPR yesterday, and then we'll head straight into the mailbag.
It feels like a defeat. I believe that the team is still growing. The team still needs time to start to learn to play together, as we have a lot of new players, which is normal at this point. just a couple of days for some of them, learning to play and learning the teammates and still needing to get in shape. I think that's the process we're going to go through. And we will have games like this where first half we didn't play well at all, but we managed in the second half to play against a very good team who's in a better form right now than us. Still, we managed to be on the verge of winning 3 points. Unfortunately, I think, again, conceding 3 goals, it's a must fix and must address a thing. It's a priority, and priority and urgency for our team. Still scoring a lot of goals, but conceding is, and we have to just stop the bleeding.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, mailbag time then. We'll start with some positives. I did have a point to mention some positives in the recap, but I thought I'd transfer it into the mailbag. Andy Taylor says, a decent result against a good QPR side, but bad to throw that lead away. Yeah, I think we've all quite comprehensively agreed with you there, Andy. Ben Greenwood says, is there a chance that we're in for the opposite of last season, in that perhaps this is our bad run? Then when players return, we pick up and finish strong. Of course, poor to lose a lead, but let's not forget how strong QPR are currently. I mean, Dave, was there enough yesterday to suggest that, you know, once the new signings are bedded in, once Halilovic and Babaraman, you know, get more game time, once Drinkwater and Dan come into the side, you know, even in January when Lucas Joao hopefully comes back and Femi Aziz, for example, comes back, is there enough to suggest that you know, once everything, you know, gets back to normal, I suppose, to a certain extent, that results might start to pick up, or it might Panovic have already left by that point?
Well, knowing our owners, if we don't pick up, then it might end up being literally a case of he won't be in the job. It's not something that I particularly want. Again, I echo Ben's thoughts that I don't want to see him sacked. We can't keep chopping and changing managers, but as you say, he doesn't really help himself. I think there's absolutely enough. You know, we demonstrated yesterday that certainly in an attacking sense, and in most games this season, in attacking sense, we are capable of creating chances and we are capable of scoring goals. But unfortunately, that balance isn't quite there in terms of the way that we defend. Clearly, defending is atrocious, really. I just wondered something that I was thinking about as Ben was speaking before. I just wonder how much autonomy the players have got to make their own decisions on the pitch, or whether or not they're being told to literally not, you know, just thinking about, as I mentioned before, we were killed down the flanks, certainly in the last 10 minutes. And I just wonder how much, you know, Halilovic and Ajaria could have been looking at, you know, doubling up and helping out the fullbacks and just closing out the QPR supply line in those last 10 minutes, because that's not something we saw at all, particularly given that was where their strengths were. It was quite frustrating watching that, you know. But in terms of, going into January when the players are coming back, there's more than enough there for us to start getting decent results. It's going to be interesting to see what effects Scott Dan and Drinkwater have. And I just wonder if they bring that little bit of extra experience and know-how, knowledge, and sort of a little bit of confidence to the team, and actually start saying, you know, and pushing them up the pitch when they're starting to sit deep. Because again, that's something that falls into autonomy. You've got to be looking at Michael Morrison and Liam Moore and saying, we're sat too deep here. We're inviting pressure. We need to push up. And you have to question why they didn't notice that. Have they been told to sit deep? Or do they have that autonomy to be able to say, we're sat too deep, we need to push up? I don't know. So if it is a Paolo decision, then that's on him, clearly. It doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. It invites pressure and you're always in danger. You know, and again, as I mentioned before, again, Josh Laurent, the way that he almost did a lot of the defensive work, wasn't able to do it all by himself. And QPR had a lot of space. You know, the equalizer's an absolute prime case in point. The amount of players that they had running in from the edge, around the edge of the area, and absolutely nobody tracking. you know, he was the three players totally free. And he got a question, well, all right, where's the midfield? You know, that everybody's sat so deep, they're on their virtually on their own flipping goal line. So clearly there's there are shoots of optimism, and John Swift being the biggest one. But that defence really, really, really needs to get sorted out sooner rather than later. Otherwise, we're going to be in deep trouble. A team that concedes lots of goals does not tend to be a confident, does not tend to carry with it a great degree of confidence. And the less confidence we have, the less likely we are to climb up the table that we really desperately need.
Well, we've had a question actually on the defence from Simon C, who says, "Captain obvious, but the defence needs a shake up. None of them are bad players, but change is needed to get out of this rut. It doesn't have to be permanent." Ben, would you make any changes to the back line on Tuesday? Obviously, we don't know if Scott Dann will be available yet. You know, lacking match fitness to play on Saturday, it's quite a quick turnaround. So I don't know whether he'll be available on Tuesday. Obviously, Tom Holmes came off the bench. He might possibly start. You know, Michael Morrison had another relatively poor performance, I felt, yesterday. Sim gave him a fall in the player ratings. You know, it's obviously it's bad defending for his own goal to begin with, and he's sort of, you know, quite out of position for the other two, and that's not the first time it's happened this season. I think of that fourth goal that Huddersfield scored 2 weeks ago, and he was woefully out of position for that one as well. What changes? I mean, that there isn't an awful lot that Pano can do sort of personnel wise, but would you make any changes to that back line Tuesday?
I mean, if Dan's available, he goes straight into the side for me. And I would like to see Holmes in there purely for the reason that, I mean, I'm huge, you know, we said time and again, massive Michael Morrison fan, superb last year, you know, real talisman for us. What I find quite baffling, I would imagine that if Dan had been fit, I don't think Moore would have started, because there was always talk about, oh, we've got these 2 weeks, it's going to be a mini pre-season. Moore wasn't there. He was in playing with Jamaica. So, you know, for me, I know it's great to represent your country and brilliant for him, but we're in a position where we've got to stop conceding goals. And if you've got one of your captain and your main defender out, you know, around the world doing whatever they're doing, they can't play. I'm sorry, but I don't understand that. We're conceding a ratio of what? 3 goals a game, if that, on average? Obviously, we did that yesterday, but it's not good enough, really. And so I'd definitely put Holmes in for either or. I don't think it matters, quite frankly. If Dan's in, then he goes in as well. I'd be tempted to leave Yeardon where he is. I didn't think he was great yesterday at all, position-wise. I thought he got beat far too many times. I thought Roman was good for a debut. You know, I felt quite sorry for him, really, because, you know, on a home debut, you don't want to be conceding 3 goals, really, but I don't to recall him being at fault for those. So, yeah. And obviously, the other question is the goalkeeper. Could the goalkeeper have done better with any of those goals? Obviously, made a superb save on the third goal. You know, that first shot came in, absolutely stunning save. But could he have done better for the first goal? Has he been good enough this season? Is it now time to be looking to Southwood to say, look, you have a go? I don't know. But certainly the two centre-backs need serious thought and consideration. And as you said, it comes down to availability, but I would be hoping that at least one of them are changed for Tuesday night.
Yeah, and it all comes down, though, for me. It's not necessarily just personnel. Yes, they've made individual errors, but you've got to, you know, take into account the way they're being told to set up, the way they're being told to play. Are they being set up, you know, for a fall? And, you know, we obviously don't know that, what's being told, what's being done on the training ground. But yes, you know, clearly it might work with different personnel. Absolutely, it might do. So, you know, if you're conceding goals, something's got to change. And if you're not going to change your setup, then change the players. And if Scott Dann is available and Tom Holmes, you think, is good enough to see a game out, then why is he not good enough to actually start a game and see the whole game through? But yeah, I can't disagree with too much of what you said there, Ben, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the drop off in Michael Morrison's performances is one of the most disappointing aspects of the season so far. I don't know whether it's the injury he got at the back end of last season, or, you know, or the fact he's just simply getting a bit older now. But he was colossal last season. He was brilliant. He was my player of the season last year, Michael Morrison. But he looks a shadow of his former self in these first 5 games. And you know, I really hope that the Michael Morrison of last season comes back, and I think that could be crucial potentially in turning any form around. David Munday says, this is going over to off the field issues now. David Munday says, there were clearly a lot of QPR fans in the Reading stands yesterday, not just a large group in the front corner of the West Stand that got moved in the first half. He says, I was in the family enclosure and we had QPR fans behind us. Although generally not a problem, their celebration when they equalised led to some arguments and my daughter in tears. Could or should the club have done more to ensure they weren't selling to away fans, or is this inevitable when the away end sold out so quickly and Reading needed the cash? Well, I mean, I was just going to sort of add some context to that. And yes, obviously QPR sold out their away allocation pretty quickly, largely due to their own fault because they put the tickets on general sale. And then inevitably, well, after their request for a beam back at Loftus Road were crucially denied by Reading. Their supporters did decide to buy tickets in the home end. As David says, a majority in the West Stand next to the away supporters. It was a shambles, really. I mean, I wasn't obviously in the West Stand, but they looked to be causing an awful lot of trouble, and obviously eventually got moved into the away end in the second half, which I thought, again, is probably the only thing they could have done. But ultimately, it almost defeats the point of, you know, not of letting them in the stadium in the first place. I was sat in the Eamon Dolan stand, and like David, I had some QPR fans next to me and in front of me. Again, not really a problem for most of the game, but certainly, yeah, when their equaliser went in, wild celebrations that did annoy me a little bit. And I mean, Dave, you're about to chip in there, but is there a solution to this? I mean, it was a shambles all round, really, both from QPR in the way they sold their tickets and from Reading in the way they dealt with the away fans in the home section.
Yeah. I mean, I've got no issue with the way that Reading conducted themselves in the build-up to the game. They gave QPR the maximum allocation. QPR's screw up with selling the tickets the way they did. They've completely underestimated their demand. But the moment, you know, I think the club have got, Reading Football Club have got to learn a lesson here. The moment that a club has that level of demand, an opposition club has that level of demand, they need to lock home ticket sales down. Now, they, funnily enough, to my knowledge, there were no away fans in Club 1871 yesterday. And the simple reason for that is that nobody can purchase a ticket in there unless you're a member and you have a prior purchasing history at Reading Football Club. And that's not just for a specific club. So, for example, a QPR fan could not have a Reading membership and just have a history of buying tickets for QPR games at the Medeski, as it was. So the club can do that. They should have done that as soon as tickets were clearly on high demand at QPR. But they obviously didn't. QPR fans, clearly a lot of QPR fans got tickets in the home ends. And the way that they dealt with them, I thought was pretty shoddy. Now they basically shepherded them into the away end, as you said. Well, that kind of says how many seats were actually left available in the away end in the first place. But, you know, if you're able to shepherd them into the away end, why, you know, they're going against the ground regulations, to my knowledge, again, if they're doing that. But you know, if you're an away fan in the home end, you know, you are going against ground regulations, and you know, by rights, you should be ejected. And they should have done that, quite frankly. You know, they should have got the stewarding teams involved and shepherded them out and just told them, no, go on your way. And that's just, you know, that's my opinion. I'd expect exactly the same anywhere else if it wasn't Reading, whoever. The fact that it's happened to us is frustrating. The way that they dealt with it in the end and took so long to deal with it was clearly causing a lot of angst down in the southeast corner. There were a lot of people. I say a lot of people. There are 15 or 20 people all having a go at the, not having a go, but vociferously demonstrates or putting across their views to the stewarding teams down there and the coppers. The coppers down there, obviously, it's not within their remit to be, you know, doing things with ground regulations and that are to do with ground regulations. but you know they could have ended up with quite a serious public order problem in the end if the club didn't do anything. So yeah, it's not good from Reading. They should have locked down ticket sales as soon as there was high demand from QPR fans, and they could have solved the problem there and then, really.
I was absolutely livid with it. I really was. And the most frustrating thing about it is we're not talking about a couple of blokes that have snuck in and, you know, we've all done it. I've done it. You know, I've been in sort of away grounds and I've kind of got into the home end and sat there and just watched the game and left and that's it. But we're talking like 20, 30 people who went there within the first 5 minutes, were playing up to the away fans. Everyone knew it was happening. It was all over social media leading up in the week and the club did nothing about it. And the most ridiculous thing about it is that, you know, in that southeast corner, there's like the hospitality bit, isn't there? And then there's like a little sort of triangle that was had like a blue net over it. So I was sat there thinking, just move them into that. Stick them in there. Line the stairwell with stewards, because it can't get any more unsafe than it was at that point, and just let them sit there. What then happened was they moved them into the away end, as Dave said, but they're all standing up in the gangway, so people can't get in and out of the concourse. So God forbid there's a problem, you know, it's it. It's game over, really. I feel really, really frustrated. And obviously, I can't remember the guy's name that sent in the question. But if I was him, I would be seeking serious answers from the club, because they have failed in their duty of care to look after those supporters. They, you know, Dave just said that, he's absolutely right. You buy a home ticket and you adhere to the home rules. They weren't doing that. It wasn't like they just jumped up sort of accidentally and, you know, celebrated a goal or whatever. This was persistent standing. It was persistent disorder. And it was caused the major issues. And what's really sad is that there'll be people in that stand that have had a season ticket in those seats for, what, 20-odd years, however long the stadium's been there, and they will probably now be thinking twice about whether or not they should be there. The worst thing about it is that that stand tends to be populated by families, as everyone said, and there might have been families there that have gone to sort of a biggish game for the first time, and they won't come back, and the club have lost money from a local family that they could have had for years and years and years. And this is just symptomatic of Reading Football Club. You know, they're not interested in looking after or seemingly looking after Reading fans. You know, they took the money. What should have happened straight away was that they should have been thrown out the minute they were demonstrating away supporters' behaviour. Simple as that. There can't be any questions, because that's what it says on the back of the ticket. So, you know, the club have got some serious questions to answer. And I know for a fact that Star are seeking some clarification on what happened in terms of the behaviour of certainly the stewards there. Not all of them, but certainly some of them. And some of the things that went on in that stand, because it was just preposterous. It really was. And how they were allowed to stay in that stand for a good 40 minutes, again, is just beyond me. Because once they'd made the decision to move them, it should have been done immediately, because it was just going to cause more problems. So it's very, very frustrating, very, very slow to react. You know, obviously they contained them, but it didn't actually move them. And it just soured the atmosphere. You know, I think the way that QPR behaved in the lead up to it was disgraceful. They didn't have to make knowledge or public knowledge of the beanback. They could have just left that, but they chose to go public with that, which stoked the fires even more. The whole thing just really, really sour taste. And you know, what's worse is that, you know, QPR fans will think, oh, it's us. It could have been anyone. But the behaviour of certainly their supporters and their club really, really left a sour taste in my mouth yesterday, and will continue to do so moving forward.
I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting what the local safety advisory group say on the back of what happened, because as we know, the away end was, you know, in inverted commas, sold out, and yet, you know, you've got, I don't know how many it was. It must have been between 50 and 100, you know, QPR fans that have all just been frog marched into the away end. Like you say, they're in the gangways now. If there's a crowd or an emergency, and that stadium needs to be evacuated, that's going to be an issue straight away. So they should never have been in a position to be, you know, never have made the decision to put them in the away end. They needed to be, you know, booted out. If they sat there quietly, like you say, if they sat there quietly and just, you know, kept their mouths shut, then I don't think too many people would have that much of an issue with it. But they didn't, like you say, they were, you know, giving it the big end to the away fan, to the away end.
But you're right, Dave. They sit there, you know, almost becomes a bit of banter then. And I've seen it happen before. You know, when we were in the Premier League, there was regularly seats next to us where they'd obviously been sold for corporate or whatever. And, you know, you had Arsenal fans, Newcastle fans. You have a good chat with them. That's what football's about. You know, this is where football needs to take its lead from rugby. But it won't, and it never will, because of situations like yesterday. It's just not good enough. It really isn't. And I feel really, really sorry for those people, those Reading fans that had to put up with that yesterday, because I don't know what I would have done in that situation, to be honest. I really don't.
Yeah, I can't really add much more than that. I completely agree. Let me make it clear. I don't really have an issue with away fans buying a ticket in the home end. As you said, they sit there quietly, that's fine. But it was the way that, well, not just the equaliser, but during the game as well, particularly in that southeast corner. And when the equaliser went in as well, I just think, just be a bit sensible about it. And I think, yeah, that's the one of the most infuriating things, is that you could see this coming from a mile off. You know, it was on social media in the week leading up to the game. You know, the club would have known that the QPR fans were going to try and get into the home end and, you know, perhaps even try and cause trouble. So, yeah, just the shambles around, as I say, and, you know, you two have both articulated it very well indeed, and just it made what was a fairly sour ending to the afternoon on the pitch, even more sour off it. We'll end the mailbag then with some questions on the manager. As I said, I don't particularly like speculating about a man's job, but as it is, we're in the position we are in. We are now in the bottom three. So a couple of questions on Veljko Panulic. Brightside says, what has Pano done right that keeps him in his job? Loyal Royal says, so my current thinking is that Veljko Panulic needs to bolster his coaching staff to give an added sounding board / reminder about tactics / game management and educate the team. Perhaps the new players will bring them this themselves. But if not, who do you think would assist in this way? Obviously, John O'Shea and Eddie Nitzveski left the coaching staff in the summer. And Sean Burgess says, if you are Pauno out, give us one sensible alternative. Wilder? He's a top proven manager. As soon as he does his research and notes that 75% of our squad leaves next year, why would he fancy that in a relegation battle this year? Ben, I mean, I suppose we'll try and cover sort of all of that in one, really. I mean, at the moment, what is keeping, we've been pretty downbeat, I would say, and very rightfully and fairly so, I would say, on Veljko Panulic. But what is Paolo doing at the moment that keeps him in this job? And I suppose, who would you perhaps bring in to help him? And I suppose if he does go, as I say, I don't particularly want to be speculating on potential replacements, because he's still in the job. But is there anybody out there at the moment that sort of stands out to you as someone you might want to come in?
It's a great question. It's really difficult to be objective based on the fact that we're sort of 24 hours removed from yesterday, and obviously the season is not going well. In terms of Pauno, I think what he's done really well is maximised, certainly last season, the resources that he had available, because, you know, us having a thin squad is not a new thing, and he got the absolute best for, what, 6-7 months out of that squad last year, up until it all fell apart around sort of March time. So I think, you know, give him his credit, particularly last season, he was outstanding with what he did, bringing the young players on as well and giving them confidence to succeed. Obviously, you know, naysayers will rightly say that he didn't have a choice because that's all he had available, but he's still got to coach those players and make them better. And there's no one can doubt that he didn't make Elise and Richards and Holmes better throughout the season, last season, consistently. In terms of this season, I think he still has a lot of sympathy from Reading fans because of the situation. And he, you know, up until recently, he's not particularly complained about that. Whereas, you know, other previous managers that we would have had probably would have, you know, worse, walked out of the job. So in terms of keeping him in, you know, there is kind of shreds of positivity from him still there, but he just has to be better, I suppose, explaining his decisions and justifying the decisions that he makes, really. My big issue, as I said earlier, is the backroom staff, because O'Shea leaving, yeah, fine, but the big one is obviously Eddie Nedzwicki leaving, because he's got a proven track record of toughing up defences, and he's worked with some of the, you know, the best coaches around. So both of those leaving in one go has been a massive problem. In terms of replacements, I Wilder's a non-starter, A, because he won't come, but B, I just don't think he's a good fit for our club anyway, and I think he's in danger of being one of those managers that is thought of better than he actually is. based on the current financial restrictions we've got, if Pavlovic did go, I wouldn't be surprised if they turn around to Michael Gilkes and there you go, have it for the rest of the season, because he's already on the books. He knows the club, he knows the players. He's not going to expect or demand a huge pay rise. He's not a name in management. He's a club legend, so you know fans would get behind him. And this is completely left field. But you know, in terms of toughening up the defence and having a bit of experience in there, you can't do worse than someone like AD Williams at the moment in terms of our budget range and what we're at, because he knows the club and he knows what to expect. And certainly yesterday, I happened to flick on BBC Berkshire Leaving, and what he was saying was true. You know, you just stop conceding goals, just do the basics, clear your lines, play ugly football. And the club at the moment and the team don't seem to be able to do that. So if the board did decide to get rid of them, you know, certainly Gilkes and being aided by sort of some other people around him would be a good fit, because he's not going to cost the world. And as I said, he's already there. Again, I'll go on record and say I don't want Pavlovic to be sacked, but I would much rather he was there and he saw this through and he turned it round, and I'd be absolutely delighted for him and the team if he could. But you have to be realistic and you have to look at the current form, you know, not just now, but the back end of last year, which for me is a massive factor, and say where are the points going to come from consistently at the moment. You know, we've got Peterborough at home, which we all hope and pray that we win on Tuesday night, but then we've got to go away to Fulham. So potentially any momentum that we do get on Tuesday might be gone by sort of 5:30 on Saturday. So very, very difficult. Great set of questions, but it's always so difficult to talk about the ifs, and you know, particularly with the management situation as well.
Well, we did actually poll supporters for their views on Roko Panovich and the Chinese owners this week, and we'll get into the results of that in News Bites.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, so a quick roundup, first of all, of all the goings on in the respective teams at Reading. The women's side have unfortunately not had the best start to the Women's Super League season. They lost 2-0 to Manchester United live on Sky last weekend, and then they lost 4-0 to Arsenal today. Obviously a very tough opening pair of fixtures for Kelly Chambers' side. So I'd imagine they will begin to pick up in the next couple of weeks. As a tough couple of opening fixtures for them. A lot of change in the squad over the summer as well, so it might just be a case of new players bedding in. It's a fairly young squad as well. They've lost, obviously, Farrah Williams, who retired, and so just the presence, I think, of someone like Farrah Williams is difficult to replace in itself, but I'm sure they'll pick up the next couple of weeks. The under-23s lost 3-0 to Charlton in the Premier League Cup on Wednesday, but they are back in Premier League Division 2 action tonight, also at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. So the women played at the Select Car Leasing Stadium this afternoon, and now this evening, more football at the home of football as the under-23s take on Nottingham Forest. And the under-18s lost 3-2 to Tottenham Hotspur on Saturday and travelled to Derby County next weekend. So all in all, a pretty poor set of results this weekend for all Reading Football Club teams. A bit of positive news. Fulham away next weekend is sold out. Always a great away day. Very much looking forward to going. Always a great day out. I don't know whether there's been questions after whether there could be a bean back at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. I suppose we'll have to wait and see. And as I say, approval ratings, as I say, we hold these every sort of couple of months, every 3-4 months, just for sort of for you to vote, give both the manager and the owners a score out of 5 on sort of how you feel they're doing at this moment in time. Velko Pavlovic came out at 2.63 out of 5, which is down from the 3.59 he averaged out 5 in May. That's his lowest ever score as manager. I think he's been polled 4 or 5 times. And unsurprisingly, that is the lowest he's had in his year in charge. It's the lowest any Reading manager has polled at since Paul Clement got 1.9 in October 2018. We all know what happened after that. And the owners also fared similarly badly. They got 2.29 out of 5, which is down from 3.35 out of 5 in May, and that is the owners' lowest ever score when they've been polled since they joined in 2017. Dave, thoughts on those scores? Are they about right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, pretty much. No surprise that Pownoe's rating has gone down, but the owners, it's the way that they financially manage the club and the contract situation with a lot of the players. It can only be a fairly low score, and they're getting sort of half marks. I mean, you can't criticise the fact that they haven't put money into the club on the infrastructure side, the training ground and whatnot. It's the playing side that really is the bugbear, and ultimately the success of the football club is intrinsically linked to the 11 players on the pitch and the first team squad, and the way that they've managed that has not been great.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth mentioning just from our approval ratings in the past, once a manager dips below a score out of 3 out of 5, they generally don't tend to return. Steve Clark, Yap Stam, Paul Clement and Jose Gomez have never recovered once their approval rating has dipped below 3 out of 5. The owners, there's probably more hope. Obviously, there's a lot less chance that the owners are going to leave than the manager will. But the owners have come back from low scores before. They got 2.45 in September 2018 before rising to their highest ever total score of 4.15 a little over a year later. We'll probably poll the owners and the manager, whether it's Veljko Panovic or somebody else, probably around Christmas, New Year time, and see whether those scores have gone up or whether the decline sadly continues. But hopefully in the short term, it's positive thoughts going in to Tuesday night's game against Peterborough. And we'll look ahead to that now in the big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Yep, so it's Peterborough at home on Tuesday night at the Select Car Leasing Stadium at 8 p.m. kickoff, and then Fulham away. Very tough trip to Craven Cottage at the weekend. Focusing on Peterborough first of all, Ben, newly promoted side, obviously second in League One last season, their first season in the Championship, I think since 2012-13. I believe, if David can correct me here, but Cardiff have won 2-1 against Nottingham Forest. Which means that Forest stay, brilliant stuff. So Forest stay bottom on 24th. Peterborough then on, so Forest on 1 point, 1 point on 24th. Peterborough in 23rd on 4 points. And then we're also 22nd on 4 points with a better goal difference. Largely because we've actually managed to score goals as well as conceding. Because Peterborough are the next worst defensive side with 14 goals conceded this season. We conceded 16. They've got no clean sheets this campaign. They've scored 6 goals in total. I think we've got 10, I think. They were hammered 6-2 by Sheffield United on Saturday. Sheffield United themselves, of course, haven't won this season before this weekend, and then put 6 past Peterborough at the weekend. So it's probably one of those either where Peterborough are going to be very shell-shocked and short of confidence, or they're going to be desperate to put in a response. And Reading very much in the same sort of scenario, and it's almost a must win, I suppose, for both sides. I know, Ben, you tweeted this morning that it feels like a must win. I mean, it's the 7th game of the season. It feels very early to be saying that, but it does almost ring true that this is just a huge, huge game, because Peterborough are a side who are on the same number of points as us, and it could turn out that if Forest also win in midweek, that and then Peterborough beat us, then we end up bottom of the Championship table going into a very tough trip to Fulham.
Yeah, and that was the reason for the tweet, because I hate to improvise. Yeah, you've got to win this game. But this one, I mean, it's the perfect time to be playing them. Both very similar in terms of the way we started the season. Obviously, it was always going to be difficult for Peterborough. I kind of feel slightly sorry for him yesterday, because Sheffield United had always had that in them, and it just so happened to be Peterborough that they came up against yesterday, and obviously, absolutely whacked them. I mean, they've got some talent in that team. They didn't get out of League One for any old reason. It's a very, very tough league. Some might argue it's probably tougher than the Championship in some respects, but they were very, very good last year. Obviously got Jack Marriott, who's a player that I like a lot. Goalkeeper who is, I forgot his name, Pim. you know, he was quite good last season as well. So there's a lot of expectation on us for this game. And I think the reason that I'm saying it's a must win is not only because we need the points Tuesday, but the run of games that we've got. You know, obviously we've got Fulham away. I believe we've got Derby away sort of midweek after. And then obviously we're back to Middlesbrough. Or is it Derby after Middlesbrough?
It's Middlesbrough first, then Derby and Middlesbrough first, I think, yeah.
So, I mean, that's not a good run of games, really, if we're short on confidence and short on points. So I would expect us to score. But yeah, to be honest, I don't know. I really don't know. I just hope that we win and we get some points on the board and can start building some momentum. As to what you said, it's going to be a very difficult game going back to Fulham. Obviously, they lost yesterday as well. So they'll be looking to bounce back sort of successively and go from there. But you know, you just have to hope that these players that we've got injured are coming back and available. And you know, Palmer's got a bit more of a headache from the team selection.
Yeah, I mean, based off Reading's record of seasons, I say there's been goal fest in most of our games. There probably will be goals judged off of Peterborough's also poor defence as well. Obviously, Johnson Clark-Harris scored 31 goals in League One last season and got his first in the Championship the weekend from the penalty spot on Saturday. So hopefully he's not got a feel for it now. I mean, Dave, I mean, if the worst case scenario does happen, and you know, as I say, we're talking ifs, buts and maybes here, but you know, we lose Tuesday and then, you know, as Ben says, Fulham did lose for the first time this season against Blackpool at the weekend. But it is then tricky to see. I'd imagine confidence will be shot if we lose on Tuesday. It's very tricky to see, A, how Veljko Panovic comes back from it, and B, sort of just where that next win comes from.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the Championship. You've got to deal with it. The games, let's coin a cliche here, the games come thick and fast. And that's quite another cliche. There are no easy games. You've got to play each team twice. And, you know, Peterborough are obviously in the division on merit. And, you know, they'll be, let's be brutally honest, they'll be looking at this fixture thinking this is something that, you know, this is a game that we can, or they can win. They'll be looking at the fact that we've just spaffed a 3-1 lead, a 2-goal lead in the last 10 minutes. They'll be looking at the fact that we can see the hell of a lot of goals. And Darren Ferguson's teams do tend to attack well. They're very, very tricky to play against. So they'll be looking at it in exactly the same sort of light as we are at them. Is they've got to win it. Otherwise, they'll be thinking, if we don't win, you know, win at Reading, then when are we going to get that win? You've got to win it, and you've got to win it, you know, convincingly. I think there's no two questions asked. There's going into that Fulham game without any confidence is looking at a daunting prospect. It is what it is. Though you've got to play the games and hopefully come out the other end with points to show for it. But yeah, it's whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, it doesn't matter how you go into that Fulham game. It's going to be difficult. You know, they have probably the best squad in the division. I'm not convinced by their manager. It's going to be interesting to see how he does on the classic Saturday Tuesday run in the Championship. He's never worked at that level before, as Di Marco Silva. But you know, at the same time, you know, they still show that they, you know, that they've got decent quality. Clearly, that their squad is what it is. It's absolutely packed full of talent, and yeah, it's a daunting prospect if we don't get anything from Peterborough.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, Dan. That Fulham side is just far too good for the division, really. And I mean, it was 2 years ago when they win the Championship and somehow didn't even get into the top two. They had to go through the playoffs. But you know, just looking down their squad, you know, obviously Mitch Rich is the one that stands out. They signed Chalobah this summer. Anthony Knockhart is one of the Championship's best players over the last 10 years. Bobby Reid scores goals at this level. You know, you can reel off their whole squad essentially, and yeah, it's far too good for this division, and fully expect them, no pun intended, to get promotion this season. prediction wise, then we won't do Fulham for now. I don't think we'll obviously that will depend on, I suppose, the result on Tuesday night. But we will put some scores in the hat for Peterborough. I don't actually have the standings to hand. We'll have to wait till Mark gets back next week to find out where everybody is in the prediction league standings. I think I said a defeat, so I suppose I was proven wrong. In fact, we got a draw, but it does feel like a defeat from Saturday. But Ben, score prediction for Tuesday night against Peterborough.
I've got to keep backing us because otherwise I'll never go to another game. So I'm going to say 2-1 to us.
Dave?
I think there's going to be goals. My instinct is saying 4-2 Reading.
Yeah, no, I agree. In fact, there are definitely goals in this game. It's almost certainly going to be 0-0 now. But yeah, I would. I'm also going to back perhaps blindly a Reading win. I will go 3-2 Reading win. Hopefully, we end up on the right side of a 5-goal thriller for once. But yeah, that just about wraps up today's show. Then predictions all secured for Tuesday night. All three of us have predicted Reading wins, which again is doesn't bode particularly well. But there we are. Yeah, Mark will be back next week to look back on the Fulham and Peterborough games. Hopefully, with at least one win to talk about. Until then, thank you very much. At home for listening to today's show. Ben, thank you very much for coming on.
No problem at all. Cheers, Dave. Cheers, Ollie. Take care, everyone, and enjoy the games this week.
Cheers, Ben. And Dave, thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, no worries. Likewise, Ben, cheers. And everybody enjoy their week.
All eyes on Tuesday night then as Reading host Peterborough United in the Championship. An 8 p.m. kickoff at the Select Carlisle Stadium. A must win. For Erko Panovic, surely it has to be. His job might even depend on it. Come on, you Ars.